everybody. Welcome to a very special episode of the Cowboy Bebop Rewatch Podcast. My name is Kate.
And my name is Alan. This was a podcast where we would watch one episode of Cowboy Bebop a week and then discuss the episode and deeper themes and just all the goodness of Cowboy Bebop. And so when the live action Cowboy Bebop was announced, we decided to do a special episode, doing the whole series in one go and kind of doing the same thing. And this podcast assumes that you have watched the Cowboy Bebop live action series or do not care about spoilers, because we will leave nothing unspoiled.
Our rewatch podcast for Cowboy Bebop came out quite a while ago, so this is just kind of a fun bonus to that. I never really thought we would record anything else about. Like, I couldn't have predicted this moment. I'm sure everybody has seen a lot of hot takes on the internet about the Netflix series, so we waited a little bit to talk about this. We did watch it pretty much around the same time as everybody else did, but talking about it a little bit later is our thing anyway. Like, we're never of the moment. I don't think it's the type of series that deserves the treatment that the rewatch of the original anime did. So, like, this is just like a one and done kind of scenario. I don't think I want to record a weekly episode about each of the live action episodes.
And that's some kind of miserable baton death march of a podcast.
And also, to be fair, I did not rewatch this show. So I watched it one time and I will talk about it now. This is not a rewatch of the Netflix show, because I will not rewatch it. All that's to say, though, like, I do think it is worth talking about. And that's why I think we're doing this. And also, you know, Cowboy Bebop is sort of special to both of us. And I think also our rewatch podcast is something that people occasionally come back to. So I'm, you know, glad to talk about it and have a space to talk about it. But I'm really trying to be conscientious that this is not an hour of vitriol.
Yeah. We had discussions about doing this podcast for a while. I think on a certain level, I think we were almost avoiding it. I recently had to go, all right, Kate, we just have to knock this guy out. If nothing else, we put in X amount of hours to watch all those episodes. As Kate mentioned, now that there's been enough time, there can be a little more of a nuanced discussion. And not that there was no nuanced discussions when it came out. In fact, I watched or listened to or read a bunch of takes on the Cowboy Bebop live action. And I do feel there was a gambit of opinions from, like, this is why this series is actually really good, to the show is the devil itself.
I think I needed some distance personally to record this, because as much as it might be fun for some people, I do not want to just, like, have a rage. Like, I just, like, do not want to be so angry about this. And, like, it's just not worth it. So, like, I feel like having some time to process that show has been good.
Plus, it almost seems like, unless this and, like, one or two other series totally stop this from happening on the regular anymore, especially how modern entertainment seems to work, I doubt this will be the last live action version of a popular anime we will ever see.
Well, I mean, they're already, you know, the cast, as we're talking about this, like, every week, I feel like there's casting news for the One Piece. Is that a Netflix?
Yes.
Also, like, the One Piece live action or whatever, which I think has the potential to be a lot worse than this one. But, like, but yeah, like, it's a thing that is happening on some frequency, so it'll be relevant.
Oh, but I just feel like this might be a good discussion as well of like how not to do a. I think there's value in discussing what this did wrong, because I don't inherently feel that you could not make a good live action series based on an anime. I think that it is, like any adaptation, a skill in of itself, and you know, some series work better than others. Without too much trouble, you could make a decent live-action monster, whereas a decent live-action Fate Stay Night would probably be much harder to pull off.
There's also, though, I feel like there's a very short list of U.S. or English-made anime live-action adaptions, but I can't think of one that was good, so, or one that people thought was good, or like, so I do think that there seems to be some inherent issues at play. Remember the Netflix Death Note movie? I don't think I ever reviewed it, but wow, was it bad. I totally agree with you, Al, that I don't think they have to be bad, but I think there's a pretty solid track record of them being really bad.
I mean, I was kind of looking on the bright side. I feel like it's almost like a movie based on a video game in hit to miss ratio, and just like, I don't think they inherently have to be bad, but if you sit down to one of these and expect it to be good, you are going to be disappointed a lot of the time.
And also, I think something that we should also mention here before we get into the bulk of this overview is that I think there was a lot of discussion, and you kind of mentioned it, I think, already, Al, that like, oh, if you saw the original anime, that's why you didn't like this live action series. And if you weren't comparing it, you know, like it was good, that there were some arguments like that going around. And like, I think something that we're definitely trying to be conscientious of that. But I think our discussion here, it's not solely about, hey, you did not do the source material justice, although that is the bulk of this podcast. But that there were other things that I think were flawed. And so, like, I don't think it works on either level. And, like, that's not to say that nobody enjoyed it. Like, people enjoy all kinds of things. I enjoy things that other people think are bad all the time. So, like, I don't, you know, I'm not saying that, like, you can't enjoy it. But I do think it's flawed on a more fundamental level than just, hey, Cowboy Bebop anime is superior.
I do remember, as I said, I actually read, watched, and listened to a number of takes on it. And I do feel like the main hot take from the pro Cowboy Bebop live action was that there are all these basically anime nerds who like love their original Cowboy Bebop. And because it wasn't what they loved, they hated this series. I think our major thesis is that there were fundamental root problems with this series that are beyond you didn't do the episode of Ballad of the Fallen Angels shot for shot.
Something that you reminded me of when you said that was when this series was kind of rolling out before it actually came out when they were, you know, marketing it, basically. I feel like they made a choice to self-compare, right? Like they did the marketing team for Netflix and this production decided that they were going to do their own comparisons, or like they were doing things shot for shot. Or if you've seen the opening for this series, they were like, we're going to like copy this. So like, that's a choice. And like, sure, you could maybe argue like, oh, well, we did the comparison because somebody else was going to do it anyway, right? Like, there was no way that nobody was going to compare it. But like, I felt like they invited it. Like, they weren't like, no, total. Like, for example, lots of movies come out every year, right? That are based on books. Like, almost every movie is based on a book, or like a good portion of them. But they don't necessarily go like, hey, you should read the book and then see the movie and then like compare them side by side. Like, they want you to engage the movie as a movie. And it's not that like people won't go read the book and then make that comparison, but like they're not making that comparison themselves necessarily. But I feel like this particular, like the way that they decided to go about it was to be like, hey, look at how we did this right next to like an anime clip of the series. So like, Are you saying I shouldn't compare it, but you're comparing it? So like, aren't you inviting me to compare it?
I mean, the thing that I remember the most about this period is I being online with a few other fans, Anime NYC, not that long before the series was going to come out. And like one of the new trailers had dropped. And since we're just, you know, on the line discussing things, and somebody brings up, hey, everybody, did you see the Cowboy Bebop trailer? I've got feelings. Literally everybody started goofing on the part of the trailer where they do that iconic Ballad of the Fallen Angel shot where, like, you know, Spike and Vicious both have their signature weapons and they're, you know, aiming them at each other, and you know, the stained glass window is behind them. There's no way that you include one of the most iconic shots in Cowboy Bebop and not draw comparisons. And everybody was gooping that it looked more less like a scene from live action Cowboy Bebop and more like somebody's amateur cosplay shot. Apparently somebody else mentioned, oh yeah, there was a whole, somebody did like side by side video that showed that like 1 second in the trailer where they set it up to the actual thing so you could see both scenes side by side. And it's like, if you put that clip in there, you know it's gonna happen. So
that's all to say, of course, we had like the longest intro ever for this.
Welcome to a Versties podcast.
Congratulations. You've made it to the actual part of the podcast. In terms of things that they did right or things that they did good, because I think that is a place to start. Admittedly, it is a, you know, a shorter section of the podcast.
Because I think one of the questions we had was like, how do we format this? How do we set it up? They're not going to be as deliberate sections, but I really, since Cowboy Bebop is highly influenced by many genres, but the Western is distinctly one of the major components. I felt like the good, the bad, and the ugly was a great way to kind of divide up a lot of our thoughts. So I feel like we'll start off with like the best parts of this series. I will admit, right now, as a disclaimer, almost every single part of the good section will have asterisks that will come up to later points in the bad and the ugly, because there are good parts of things like The Room that are otherwise complete disasters. But make no mistake, those things are complete disasters.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I think, I would say that no doubt, as should have been clear from the introduction, I was pretty, had a lot of trepidation once this was like in production. But one of the things that I did really like and liked when I watched it was the casting for the main, like our main three. Like, I love John Cho. He's great. You know, I enjoy him, and like, I think the other actors, like, in my mind, like, they were well cast for what they wanted to do, but I think they did what they could with the material, but I just don't think it ended up, like, I just don't think the material was good, and I think they did everything that they could with it, so that doesn't make them, I don't think their performances necessarily were, like, always good, and in fact, sometimes they were pretty dull, but, like, they're also working with the material. I think John Cho as Spike has moments where I really, like, thought he was great. Like, the overall performance taken as a whole, I think, is pretty weak.
One, I do feel at least the main trio, actor and actresses, seem to very much enjoy the thing that they did, because, when the series was canceled and there was a lot of backlash, they really stood up for it, and some of them took, like, some of the criticism rather personally, and I feel like if you didn't care at all about the production and the performance you gave, you wouldn't do that. And so I don't think that they, you know, just there for a paycheck and then forgot about it. I think they had a personal connection to the series that they worked on, and there were several members of the crew who also did that, and so I don't think that this is just a completely, I don't think that this was like one of those cynical things where, like, everybody showed up and just collected a paycheck and didn't care about it. I think if anything, some of the cast, if not a lot of the cast and crew, you know, really seriously cared about this production. So that's worth noting. And I feel in general, Watanabe series have a very ethnically diverse cast and, like, reflected ethnically diverse universe. You can see that in Cowboy Bebop. You can see that in Carolyn Tuesday. And I felt like this series also did a lot to capture that and pay respect to that. And that's something you can't criticize the series for. See, we can say nice things about the series.
I think one of the other kind of components that you mentioned, the trailer, Al, and I don't know if it was the same trailer because I can't recall, but one of the trailers had what I thought was, like, very cool editing. And I felt like that the series overall had some, like, good, this is, like, the most technical thing I could possibly say, and I am not a film person, so, like, take it however you want. But, like, I thought it had some, like technically good camera work. Like, I thought it had some good editing, and, like, that trailer was really, like, well edited. I, like, they were, like, walking, and then they, like, would change, and they were, like, interacting with, like, the change in the, like, frames and stuff like that. Like, there was some, like, really, I thought, like, nicely done editing. So, like,
I agree with you. I think a lot of the criticism that I saw pointed out all the places where they failed, which I think were plentiful. But, like, I think, like, when I remember that, I don't like that initial scene in the space casino, I feel like there were a lot of things wrong with that scene. But, like, there was this one cool shot where they just did a long tracking shot, which I think show that they, like, they could do a good shot when they wanted to. I just think that there are a lot of other, that one scene, that one shot alone does not make up for the multiple other sins in that whole sequence. But it is not like it is not the total, like, Troll 2 or The Room incompetence of, like, people who just do not know how to film.
And then I think the other kind of big thing that it had going for it was it did have the Yoko Kanno, you know, like she did a new song, I think.
She did several new songs.
You know, she was involved in the music, but again, asterisk of like, sometimes they didn't use that music well or like in the best, like it felt like sometimes they misinterpreted like what the theme of a song was or like the emotion of a song or like that sort of stuff. But like, obviously just taken completely out of like the context of where it was used. Like, obviously the music is great.
It was one of the few times that they understood what was great about Cowboy Bebop. And they didn't just like, oh, let's just pump out a whole new soundtrack to put in this series. They realized that like one of the, you know, the most powerful things that people remember about Cowboy Bebop was its music. So let's make sure that we get the right for that to put them in there, because that's like part of the soul of Cowboy Bebop. Well, since we're not in a clear good, the bad, and the ugly section, that like almost all the new soundtracks are jazz. All the new entries on the soundtrack are jazz. And it's like, oh, you also seem to have forgotten or missed that one of the cool things about the original Cowboy Bebop is that the original, like some of the more iconic soundtracks are jazz, but they're not all. And the original soundtrack was amazingly diverse in the number of songs that it was. It wasn't all jazz. So, you know, another swing and a, you know, a partial hit, but then a miss overall.
I think that really leads into the whole show feels very surface level understanding of the source material, I guess. And so, you know, one of the things that I was thinking about after watching this was, go with me on this thought exercise, sure. Okay? If Cowboy Bebop is a text, right? And when I say text, I mean it in a very like academic way. Like Shakespeare is a text, right? That people reinterpret, because Shakespeare, a play, doesn't have all the context. Like you can like it's just people talking. And so like, is Hamlet, like, does he really see a ghost? Or is he like having a nervous breakdown? Does he have crazy eyes? Like, you know, like Hamlet has been reinterpreted hundreds of times about like what is his motivation or like what is really happening to him, right?
Or I think the other classic example is Sherlock Holmes, and like,
there's more context in a Sherlock Holmes story than there is like in a Shakespeare play. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's like a classic that people reinterpret over and over again. If we pretend that Cowboy Bebop is that, which it isn't, that's the thing, is like I don't really think it is a text necessarily that you can just like, oh, we'll just reinterpret it any way that we want. But if it was, what was this series like doing with it? Unfortunately, as it does that, I think it just doesn't dive deeply into any of like the pools that it then is like, oh, we're gonna reinterpret this. Like Faye is like an especially weird, I think, version of that, of like, okay, she's so different in the live action series, which is not necessarily bad if we're saying, you know, like, hey, is her core, right? Like in a text, you're like, I need the core, I only need the core part, and we can change all the other stuff. But I don't think that they really, it didn't feel like they really understood her.
I'm not sure if it was to me, to the audience, or both, but Kate, if, let's go on a thought experiment. You know, forgive me, but let's go on a thought experiment. You never have to apologize to that to me, because the number of times I have done that with you, you never have to, you might have to apologize to the audience. You never have to apologize.
I mean, I sort of said it also because you don't have to, like, there is no reason that you have to follow me on this path of like, no, if you don't want to see it that way, I don't blame you. I don't even know if I believe myself. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying I really think I should interpret it this way, but it's like, it's a way of interpreting the work and then like finding the essence of everybody. And then you should, if you can, if you truly understand that, you should be able to change everything else and you can hold on to that. But I don't think that the show successfully does that. So like, that's where it starts to break down. And I guess you could say that that's an adaptation. Like, I'm comparing it. So like, on that level, I think that's the most core thing you need for an adaptation. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about, you know, like, yeah, some of the sets were like cheap or whatever, or like, does the costuming totally work in a live action set? You know what I mean? Like, stuff like that is surface. But I think even like core understandings of who the characters were isn't there. And that's like the most important part for you to reinterpret.
And don't worry, we'll get into that.
I mean, we're here.
The other thing I just wanted to mention, and it, huge asterisk, although Kate picked Faye, there is another character that we
were. I mean, he goes in a later section, but like.
Oh, they go in later.
So many people. But like, you know, I don't mind like the idea of Faye being a character who is like, hey, she's had to go through a lot of shit, right? And so her way of dealing with that is to like talk trash and be like really sort of like abrasive. I don't think that that's a bad interpretation of like that character. But like as the series goes on, I think it never actually makes sense. Like especially there's like this whole episode with her mom. That relationship, how they reform that is so like breaks a lot of like the stuff that they were like doing with the characters, I think.
I think the thesis, there is just a total misunderstanding of these original characters. And I think that their new interpretations don't add anything interestingly thematic or form a new interesting core theme. Like, I remember, like, just our initial discussion, like, halfway through was this complaint that I think we had about Faye, that, like, that Faye's original character concept was very much, you know, and it, I think Watanabe said this, that the original Cowboy Bebop crew has at least some parts of inspiration on the Lupin gang, and that Faye is very clearly the Fuchiko. She's not the strongest. She's not the most skilled in combat, but what she is kind of the clever femme fatale that also has a wide variety of skills, just not as good as anybody else in the Cowboy Bebop. She's, you know, never going to be as good a swordman as, you know, Goemon. Never going to be, you know, a good a thief skill-wise as Lupin. Never good a shot. There seems to be this effort to up her combat abilities, especially like in the first time where she meets Spike, and kind of have her less reliant on those skills, which I think is an interesting, you know, concept, that she's more of an equal, or later on there's that where Spike and her are kind of bonding over previous bounties, and it's this.
It is, in my opinion, the only good scene between them in the whole show.
And so there's like this, I think, very concerted effort to make Faye a equal to Spike in the bounty hunting realm. And I don't think that's an inherent flaw, but I also don't feel like you said, it's one of the few good times, the one time when they successfully pull it off, it's one of the few good parts of the series. But I feel like outside of that one scene, it rarely adds to her character. And they never pursue it enough for it to have an interesting, a greater dynamic. And I feel they rob a lot of her interesting Fujiko-ness and uniqueness otherwise.
I think that kind of comes up a lot, is that they make a change, but then they don't, like, do a lot with it. And I feel like that happens, like, for everybody and throughout. And, like, one of the, I think, not only is that Spike-Faye dynamic, like, a little bit, like, never quite gets going. It, like, almost never, like, gets going. Like, it's, like, this show, I mean, as it assumed that it was going to get another season, which I can understand. They were like, well, we have to, like, build this in a different way. But I don't think that the building blocks were not very well crafted here, because they spend so much time, I think, on the trio not trusting each other and not liking, like, it's really hard sometimes. Like, it's like, Spike and Jet do not feel like friends in this show to me. Like, there are maybe occasional moments similar to that moment with Faye that we were just talking about, but, like, overall, they don't feel like friends. And, like, one of the big things that I really enjoy and, like, a core sort of dynamic there in the original is this friendship between Spike and Jet is, like, central. And then, like, then you add Faye into it, and then you have a contrast between Spike's old life and his relationship with Julia and Vicious. Like, those are supposed to be, like, contrasting elements. And because that found sort of family dynamic never comes together, and then we also, like, when we're seeing Spike's past, it also never is there. It, like, never comes together. So then you don't have those contrasting points of view. So, like, Spike and Jet's relationship is, like, so distrustful in this, in a way that, like, it isn't. And I feel like that prevents, like, that core relationship from, like, solidifying.
I don't want to bring up Lupin too much, but it does feel like they definitely wanted, Watanabe definitely wanted to recapture that, like, Lupin, Jigen, like, occasionally vitriolic to each other, but really this, like, core belief in the other guy. Like, we may occasionally barb each other or, you know, have conflict, but we are loyal bros to the end. And Faye has a very Fujiko dynamic where she's kind of part of the team, but never also part of the team. And,
like, you never know if she's going to betray you or help you, you know.
And it feels like at the end of Cowboy Bebop live action, they wanted to have that, like, and now the family is broken apart because of this trust and betrayal. But it was like, I never believed that they were the family in the first place, so this means little to me.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I felt like they got in their own way a lot.
Like, one of the major changes is, unless I'm wrong, Jet knows that Spike used to be in the syndicate in the original TV series, and they still work together, and it's, you know, something that comes up and has a little bit of contention between them. But for some reason, and once again, it's for the big betrayal and, you know, breaking up the Cowboy Bebop family at the end of the series, is that, like, for some reason they decided it was a good idea that Spike never tells Jet that he was in the syndicate, so it can come out as the liar revealed at the end of the season one. And then Jet can go, you put my daughter in danger and lied to me, so what do you call it? You're off my ship forever. We'll never be friends again. And then, you know, and then Spike can be super emo and say it at the end of the season and then have to be picked up by Radical Edward. What a core misunderstanding of the Spike Jet relationship for so flimsy a payoff. And so,
yeah, I mean, I totally agree with that, but I also think there's like this, there's like a level of melodrama, I guess, in it that, you know, I'm not against melodrama, like, as like a concept, but I just, it felt incongruous with the world that they had created here, because there's that melodrama of like, yeah, now we'll never be friends or whatever, like that moment. But then there's also like the whole romance between Spike and Julia is also very like please put me out of my misery while watching this. But like, it's just so contrived. Like, it just doesn't, it doesn't feel like it takes into consideration like the overall world that they have created and captured. And so like, yeah, would Jet really react, like, would Jet really react that way? Like, the world is so bad, you guys. Like, it's just like a freaking bad place. Like, so I feel like the stakes sort of, and like, okay, is this really what he would be reacting to in the situation that we're in? Like, I feel like that's also at play here. That makes no sense.
So two things I just wanted to mention, because I think it's interesting. I read some interviews, and they definitely, this is possibly going to get a reaction out of Kate, that the creators of live-action Cowboy Bebop deliberately made the world of live-action Cowboy Bebop a more optimistic and less craptastic future, because they thought that was more important. So, Kate, that's why that reaction could exist, because the live-action Cowboy Bebop universe is supposed to be less of a horrible place than the anime live-action Cowboy Bebop.
Well, then I think that they're confused. Not that they really understand how to do noir. I mean, like, that should have been our first statement about this show, because they don't. But, like, that's the thing, is, like, they're like, oh, we want to have, like, these trappings, right? Like, we want this, we're going to take this surface level of it, but also we're going to make it optimistic. It's like, these things are at odds. Do you understand that? Like, you, that is, like, I can't even speak. Like, you are trying to do something that's noir without understanding what noir is. And then you are breaking everything. And, like, optimistic, why are we, what are we here for? First of all, that they think anything in here that is optimistic is bonkers. But, like, noir is at odds with what they're talking about. So, like, why did you then decide? Like, why does it look like this then? Like, why did you decide to, like, is it, like, you, are you just, like, fundamentally saying, like, oh, we're just, like, trying to flip noir on its head? But, like, you don't successfully do that. So, like, what? Like, Jet's story, like, is flipped. The script is flipped with Jet's, like, backstory, right? And it's like, no, but that doesn't make sense in the world that you're supposedly this. Like, I don't know. Maybe they didn't want it to be noir. Now that you say that, I'm like, is that, like,
because, well, I mean, like, there is more noir in 5 minutes of Beastars or Odd Taxi than there is in all of live-action Cowboy Bebop.
But, like, now I'm just thinking that they didn't want it to be noir, I guess?
But there is that episode with Jet's backstory that is utterly filmed in a noir set. Like, it definitely...
Well, to me, yeah, they just wanted the, like, aesthetics of noir, but they didn't want, like, you know, like, the story structure, the theming, I guess. But then, I don't know, that's very confusing to me. Because I thought that, like, I was like, because, like, I feel like one of my criticisms was just, like, the misunderstanding of noir here. It's like, look, you can't give Julia a Veronica Lake haircut and say, like, we know what noir is, okay? like, but if, I don't know if I would say that they successfully created an optimistic world either, so.
But I feel like, I swear I remember somebody mentioning this. In fact, all they seemed to do was neuter all the more interesting social commentary that's even more relevant in the original Cowboy Bebop in this new version. As somebody, I think, mentioned, like, just how corrupt the police force is that Jet is no longer a part of is such a major thematic part of the original Cowboy Bebop, which they definitely soften in this new one. Or how much of Faye's backstory is a criticism of the healthcare system and how it sends people into radical debt if you don't have the right coverage or, like, get in the wrong position. And it's never blatantly, you know, some character comes out and goes, and this is why X is the theme of this episode, but it's there if you just know how to read subtext in all of Cowboy Bebop. And so apparently somebody thought all of that was way too pessimistic, but they don't add in anything interesting and, like, almost seem to misunderstand or never grasp.
I feel like it just comes out muddled then. You know what I mean? Like, it's like muddy. It just doesn't, I don't think I really saw this as an optimistic. So I guess it doesn't succeed on that level either. Structurally, what I was kind of alluding to before is, like, I feel like here's some things, like I said, here's a list of things that are not about the comparison to the original that are a problem. So I feel like this show thinks that longer episodes mean, like, that it can have more content and, like, that just equals better story, which, like,
because almost all the episodes have new titles because they're almost all two old Cowboy Bebop episodes Frankensteined into one new Cowboy Bebop episode that, like, one episode is the A plot and the other episode is the B plot.
Except for Ballad of Fallen Angels, where, like, it gets split up into, like, weird places. And, like, they reconfigure how, because, like, Faye's, like, opera story where she, like, meets Vicious for the first time, which is, like, super good. Like, they were like, you know what? We'll just, who cares? Was that a good scene? No. Let's just put that in the Eco Terrace plot that everyone hated. But anyway, okay, wait. That was a comparison. But, like, it just seems to equate, like, a longer runtime with, like, oh, well, that means the stories will be better because it's an hour long. And they don't use their time well. There's, like, a lot of drag. Like Al said, like, because they had this runtime, instead of, like, really creating a 1 hour episode, you have, like, an A plot and a B plot, and, like, sometimes they connect, but, like, that doesn't necessarily make it better. The other thing that I think is really terrible is the series is like, oh, we're gonna add more sex. Oh, good. Like, it's the Game of Thrones. The Game of Thrones, like, we're going to add more sex and that's going to make it mature, you know, but, like, it actually, this show is, like, so unsexy. It's kind of amazing. And I guess I can compare that. That is a slight comparison to the original because the original is a very sexy show and it doesn't have to work that hard to be so because it knows how to, like, have characters have actual chemistry with each other and, like, create actual tension in a scene.
Just to bring up a criticism I heard, like, there were a bunch of people and there were some shallow pigs about this, but there were the people who are like, oh, people don't like the new Faye because she didn't have, you know, D cups and was popping out of her outfit like original Faye. And, you know, it was only, you know, howling wolf boys who want their, you know, utterly sex doll Faye. And that's why they didn't like new Faye.
Faye's outfit is the least sexy thing about her in the original. Like, she is, everything else is what makes her sexy. It has nothing to do with, I mean, like, obviously people like skimpy outfits, but like, most, anyway, like, that's like beside the point. And like, there's all lots of other characters with sexual tension in the series that aren't wearing skimpy outfits. So, like.
But I feel like that was a common criticism that it was, it was all just a bunch of, you know, people who wanted Faye to, you know, be the, you know, because, you know, Faye distinctly has some Gynax bounce in some sort.
Oh, totally. But, like, how did those people then explain that, like, whole episode that takes place in a bunch of strip clubs that, like, oh, P.S., not in the original. So, like, why was this added? Like, you know, just, or, like, Grin's whole character and like the bar that they work at, like what is this? Like,
and I think the scene that is most iconic, I think the minute you mentioned it, I will not, once again, in another, Kate explains the scene perfectly, and I will never forget how her, Gren's whole Peter porn producer.
Yes. It's like,
from like the Game of Thrones style, like, this is how you actually be sexy scene.
Yeah, exactly. It's like none of that was sexy in this show. It didn't make it more mature, and also like it, and then comparing it to the original, like, didn't need to do any of that, and it was way sexier show. So like, I feel like that's a problem. And then the other problem structurally, going back to the very first episode, is, like I said, this show gets in its own way because it doesn't know how to structure a narrative for a reveal. Like, it's like a kid with a secret that just, like, they can't keep it in. And it's like, if you just wait, the narrative will be better, because then when it happens, we'll be like, oh, like, oh, I didn't see that coming or whatever. But it never does that, except one time, and it's the worst thing ever.
Like, oh yeah.
Like, the worst thing ever.
I don't know. I think one of my main problems, just to get back to our original topic, is just like the ruination of the Spike Jet friendship, and like how they just never have that thing. And also how much they change. Like, they definitely change Jet's character to make him this, like, sad sack single dad. I guess the divorced dad.
Yeah.
And, you know, him constantly trying to get his daughter's approval, which, like, it was probably the change that they did the most effort to establish. Once again, at least, and that, when they made that change, they, like, at least committed to that one. So, I can't, you know, of all the complaints, at least that one, they put some, you know, they put a decent amount of effort. Although it's possibly, like, the one they put the most effort to, it also just seems like the one just so they can have Marley get kidnapped, and I forgot his actual name, he's so much like, Barrett in this one, I accidentally gave him, Barrett's kid's name right there.
Yeah, I have no idea what.
But it just seems also there just so they can have Marley get, I'm just going to call it Marley, Jet's daughter get kidnapped so he can be more mad at Spike at the end of the season. I feel like there was a gross misunderstanding or like bizarre understanding of, I feel like Watanabe very clearly places the episodes in a specific building tension. And so, like, bringing, like, I was perplexed when, like, they bring elements of cowboy funk and the Teddy Bomber into like a really early episode or like parts of Brain Scratch and with little added effect. I know you weren't a huge fan of him, but like I was, the minute they poured in the Teddy Bomber, I was like, oh, they can't bring in Cowboy Andy, because the only reason, if you think he works, I think you were never a fan of him, but the only reason that Cowboy Andy works in Cowboy Funk in that episode is because you've been with Spike long enough that you know his character, so that when Cowboy Andy appears as this almost comedic parody of the worst elements of Spike's character, you know Spike well enough to understand why this character works. I'm like, you can't bring him in episode 3 because he makes no sense. They did bring in the rest of that episode and it not being as much context, or once again, bringing in Brain Scratch, which is supposed to be like a real deep examination of like the lost lamb that is the softer elements of Faye, but they made it all about Spike for some reason. Or the worst part in my episode, bringing halfway into the episode the Faye backstory episode, so that essentially her character arc is dead in the middle of the series.
I mean, the whole thing with her mom is just, like, it's just perplexing.
But, like, it's just, it's all those in my, and there are other examples, but all of those are clear examples of they didn't realize why those episodes were in the places that they were, and shifting them did nothing. And in fact, I'd argue that the Faye shift was the most egregious, because you just murder her arc. And because that's supposed to be reveals that are at the end, because that's, you know, setting you up for the real folk blues.
Right. And I think, again, that it doesn't work so well because we haven't gotten to know Faye enough. And then it's like, there's no emotional, I think, payoff in that, in the way that they did it and where they placed it. It, like, doesn't have. I don't think there is actually any emotional payoff pretty much in the show, period. Again, I think that's also kind of down to, like Al, what you're talking about is all structure. Like, mm-hmm. It's all narrative structure. And, like, similar to what I was saying about the show getting in its own way, it's, like, that's, it keeps, you know, floundering on like understanding how to create tension, create emotional resonance, like all of those things. It just, things were not placed where they needed to be on the board, on the chessboard.
Another important part that isn't in the ugly, but a lot of people who are interested in cinematography mentioned that although they have some good shots, many of the shots are very boringly directed, which were far more interestingly directed in Cowboy Bebop. Also, apparently, for some reason, like Battlefield Earth, they really like Dutch angles and like having the camera skewed in the live action for like little to no reason.
I mean, I think, again, there's a lot of like style over substance, mm-hmm. in those scenarios, because Dutch angles are used a lot in noir, mm-hmm. like they're, that's a, you know, again, but it's like, oh, but we're not noir, we're optimistic, or like, are we noir, but we only understand noir as like an aesthetic and not like it having anything deeper than like it just looks a certain way.
But in good noir, the theme and the aesthetic build on each other, right, and support each other. Whereas it's like, oh, you understand the aesthetic trappings of noir, but cannot or refuse to tie them into the thematic.
And like you said, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if they're like, don't understand it, or they were like, no, we wanted to build an optimistic world. We just like wanted it to be opposing to like the aesthetic, but like, I don't think that was working for the show. So like, and I think if we're, you know, I don't think that's a good reinterpretation of like the source.
A lot of people mentioned that the show at times feels very cheap. Special effects can be cheap. It's also very clear that they avoid any scenes on Earth and Venus in the live action as much as humanly possible, because they would be the more expensive sets to do. Like, almost everything is on Mars or a space station, because those are the cheaper ones to film on, because Venus has a very distinctly different and alien feel, and then everything on Earth is super post-apocalyptic. Although they do go back to Earth for that one scene in Brain Scratch.
I feel like in terms of set design and all of that, yeah, it feels very CW to me. And I know a lot of people like really enjoy the CW aesthetic, but like it never really looks that great, I don't think. And I don't know if it was just me, but like sometimes the show made me like embarrassed for like it's like, you know, it thinks it's cool, but it actually is like kind of cringy, and you're like, oh, like, do you know? You think you're being cool right now, don't you? Like it made me uncomfortable sometimes.
I mean, I think the famous like line where they thought they were cool, but everybody just made a joke of it and was like, Faye, you know, her shooting people and going, welcome to the ouch, what I think is like the classic, oh, you thought that line was cool, oh no.
Like, oh jeez, I'm so sorry for you. The dialogue is just nowhere near how like good, like.
I think also the famous scene of like, oh, you think this dialogue is cool, is the scene where they're talking about the tolls, and people have compared it between like the kind of like casual cynicism of like the Gate Corporation and all that, and like the really on, like there's a scene where like they're talking about the tolls and like the corruptness of the gate system in both series, and like it's just a night and day difference of like subtlety. Also, I want to just mention how like the mood is completely lost in the Perrette LeFou, and also bringing in Perrette LeFou like so early in, and also, and this will come up, having to make it a syndicate story, and that, but that just the complete misunderstanding of how Perrette LeFou's story worked in the original one, and like how, I mean, I wonder, I feel like there was a way to make that work in live action, but it did not. Another complaint, it's just minor, and it's a minor sin of something we'll get into greater, but like Red Eye is this iconic drug that's important in the first episode. It like, it has a great visual effect when you use it. And for some reason, and like a lot of like remakes or prequels or like side stories love to take one minor element in the main story that they're, or like, you know, original story, and like expand it out, because for some reason in live action Cowboy Bebop, Red Eye becomes an important part of everything, and it's like in plot elements throughout the thing, and it's like, it was just a cool one drug that was in that, a cool visual effect in the first episode, but you're like, nope, people remember Red Eye, so we're just gonna throw it in the whole dang series.
Ow. Banana fish.
Once again, I don't think it's an egregious enough problem to go in later things, but it just annoyed me because I've seen...
Well, but I would say that it leads into the overall problem, I think, which is like the syndicate, right? The, it's part of the syndicate story. And like, that's like the kickoff of the syndicate is the most important element of this story. Mm-hmm. And like, that's a part of like the biggest problem with the show. I agree with you that like it as its singularity is not an ugly, mm-hmm. but it's part of the greater ugly part of this show. Like, because like Spike's character, like everything about Spike is wrapped up in the syndicate story. Every red eye, every episode has to have some connection to the syndicate. Like everything has to like lead back. We always have to have a part of the syndicate story. Vicious has to appear in every episode. All of it, it's all connected. Like the ugly is, Red Eye is just the tip of the iceberg.
I also just feel like I'm a little upset, and this is just a minor thing, but like they lost so much of the philosophical, like the kind of more interesting philosophical core of Spike being very Lupin, but he is also very, very much Bruce Lee, and Bruce Lee's very key philosophies. I just happened to recently listen to a Bruce Lee podcast on the life of Bruce Lee, so this sticks out to me more of like his whole, you know, flowing, you know, he makes the famous flow like water, although actually somebody else wrote that for Bruce Lee in one of his movies, but like his whole kind of, but Bruce Lee was very famous for being very studied and like in Taoist and Buddhist philosophy, and that was very much a key part of Spike, even though at times he betrays that, but that's kind of part of his, like, Spike is well-versed in these things and, like, understands it, but in many ways he sabotages himself even knowing these things. Whereas I don't feel like that ever comes across in the Cowboy Bebop live-action version, and I don't feel like that's John Cho not understanding that, or, like, it's that isn't present, so John Cho can't bring that out because it's not like John Cho would have had to go watch the original Cowboy Bebop, realize that was a key part, and then actively throw it into the character outside of the script, which I think is asking a little much of John Cho to do. But I feel like it's an egregious part to leave that out, and that's, I think, more of a problem with, once again, the main problem of them not understanding these original characters and realizing that part of Spike is based on Bruce Lee and his deep understanding. Because also Bruce Lee understood these things very consciously, but also sabotaged his life in many ways going against these principles. And I feel like that was an amazingly good part of Spike that just is vanished from the live action version.
All right, we could literally pick this apart all day long.
So those were just the ones that I just wanted to, at least before we get into the Midler, were all just things that really like super irked me.
So let's get into it. Let's talk about the syndicate. I feel like this shows the biggest problem with the whole series, which is like, what did the creators think Cowboy Bebop was about? Because, I mean, some people on the internet got ratioed over this, where they were like, yeah, Cowboy Bebop was full of filler episodes. And it was like, if you thought that Cowboy Bebop was about the syndicate, you are the person who did not understand what was actually going on. And so, like, I it makes me so sad that, like, the creators of this show, like, fundamentally didn't understand that. Like, that they thought that the syndicate was, like, what everybody was watching for, and, like, that that was the most important thing, and that that was, like, the core of what mattered.
I will play devil's advocate here for a second and wonder if the Cowboy Bebop cast and crew was not fully at fault here for one reason. Apparently, I just before this episode watched a video by this guy like Captain Midnight who a while back did a video called Netflix is in Danger and like about his like major criticisms of Netflix and how he thought that there's going to be like a major like crash in viewership and like a loss of dominance in like the whole Netflix model. And a bunch of people basically had major criticisms, pointed out like flaws in my thinking. And he was like, and I don't think all of them wrong. I don't think I have like a perfect opinion, but it was just like, here's what I see of if Netflix, you know, loses its dominance as major problems, the seeds will be the X, Y, and Z. And he's like, and I wasn't always right, but it seems like a lot of my predictions actually have come true. And he did a recent one of like, here, now that, you know, because apparently last month, Netflix had its first major period where it did not go up in people subscribing and actually had a loss of subscribers. And there's been like a whole bunch of panics and they're thinking of putting in new pay models where like there's a cheaper monthly subscription, but it's got ads. And one of the things he brings up in the video is there's just this very important, although a lot of Netflix is steeped in mystery, like we don't know any of the numbers, and a lot of other things are shrouded in mystery about Netflix. One of the things that has very prominently been announced time and time again, and what we do know, is that they care very much about the metrics of bingeability and being able to watch a series in a complete and even flow. And it seems Netflix very much has this mandate that the shows on there must have this through line that is bingeable, because this is what they consider the most important thing. And it's becoming more and more apparent that this model has some major flaws that reduce the viability and longevity of a lot of series. But I wonder how much Netflix demanded that Cowboy Bebop, if it was going to be on their platform, have this through-line story, because that's what makes it bingeable and important for what they consider for their algorithm and their series. So I wonder if that was not their fault, but a demand from Netflix. Although, once again, that's still a flaw in the series, but I wonder how much that was thrust upon them.
My counterpoint to that is just that they still had to make a conscious decision there, because as far as what we know, again, we don't really know very much, but like typically Netflix is completely hands off. Like they're like, you make a thing, we're going to put it on the platform. So like, typically they it's not like they're watching dailies or something and they're like giving feedback about a series. Like they're like, here's the money, make the thing. At least it sounds like they're pretty hands off. So like they might ask for something like that, but like they're not monitoring it essentially. I'm not saying that a series should just be like, well, fuck those guys. We're not going to do what they say. But like,
not everybody is going to be the famous story about Nadia and the NHK where the guy next had the script notes for Nadia the fax machine, they would have them spit it out into the garbage can because Anno did, that's how much he cared about what the NHK bosses said that should happen in Nadia episodes.
Right. Like, I mean, I feel like, I'm not saying they would ignore it, but like at the same time, like the creators who were making it made those decisions. Like, bingeable could mean anything, okay? Like, whatever your through line is, like, it didn't necessarily have to be the worst syndicate story about Red Eye of all time. Like, I think there were other options, everyone. Like, so while I can appreciate that they maybe felt like they had to add some sort of long-term element that had to be in there, like, they decided what it was, and they wrote it. So, like, and there are comedies on Netflix, so, like, sitcoms, obviously, like, their sort of whole thing is, like, they might have, like, a small thing that is, like, reoccurring, but, like, you know, they're kind of self-contained, so, like,
they mentioned in the video also that one of the problems is that since comedies are less like that, Netflix gives those shows a lot less priority. And like things that have succeeded, like BoJack Horseman, have almost been in spite of Netflix. So I wonder, I'm giving a modicum of defense for something. Just because, as I said, we're trying not to be utterly vitriolic, that might have just been a concession that they either were forced to or felt they had to make the series successful on the platform that they were on. But like you said, even if it was the case, they did it in literally the worst way.
Yeah, it's not... Netflix doesn't give comments on stories. So, like, you can't blame them for, like, the story that you wrote. Like, so, you know, I think the syndicate is just a part of Spike's past. It's a part of, it's a side element. Like, it's not, like, it's kind of one of those elements that when you see it the way that they did it, it's like, oh, right, we didn't want to know any more about this because it makes it worse, not better or more interesting.
So are we going to talk about the elephant in the room who he might not actually be the worst in your opinion?
Oh my, what? Who is it? Who is then?
Oh, okay. I'm going to go for some spoilers. I thought we were going to start with Vicious and end with Julia.
I mean, Julia is an entire character assassination. Vicious is just like, oh, you know what? Vicious really only needed to be in this show for like the 20 minutes that he is in the original because I guess this is what happens. I think other people could have written a better Vicious story, so I don't want to say that definitively. He's not like the Boba Fett or whatever, but like Vicious is like the most comically unintimidating character that for some reason, like, it's just like, okay, so I feel like you could argue on the one hand, right, that, oh, they did that on purpose. No, they didn't. But like, you could say, oh, they wanted him to be this like bullshit, not intimidating, like thinks that he is like a big man on campus and he's not, and he's like pathetic, right? Because he really is pathetic in this show. But it doesn't track that like Spike is terrified of him and like runs away, and like it's like you can't have both of these things. Like you can't have Spike be intimidated and worried about this guy and also make him such a loser.
I mean, it would be hard to cast someone who is as bashonenly good looking as Vicious is portrayed and as a good actor. You could probably do it. But like the problem with Vicious in the live action Cowboy Bebop is he feels more like some Sad Sack accountants cosplaying as Vicious throughout the live action Cowboy Bebop. Because he's just this pathetic, spoiled rich boy with daddy issues who just comically fails upward until the end of the season.
Yeah, like, and it's like, and I feel like it, on some level that would be fine, except you have the Spike story, which makes it make zero sense. It's like, the other problem is that I don't believe that that's what they were trying. Like, that is not what they were trying to do with him. Like, you will never get me to believe that. And if the creators ever came out and said that, I'd be like, you are a liar. Like, you thought that this guy, like, that you had created this villain, but you made so many comedic airs. And also, like, every time he would show up, they would play this like Twin Peaks like music, which just made it worse, like, every single time. But like a pathetic villain is not a bad concept, but that is not what they were trying to do, and so it undercuts the entire Syndicate story. Because again, also, like, I don't know how you're supposed to make a Syndicate story about these total fuck-ups be like, this is an optimistic point of view of the world. I'm not sure what that is. The Syndicate story is just so boring and uninteresting. And, like, you, because Vicious is not a good character in what they've written, it's also, like, so much time spent with him that, again, you're taking away from the main cast. You're spending time in every episode focusing on this other thing that is not helping us in any way connect with your core cast. So, like, it's like drain. It's a drain on that.
I also mentioned, just because we're going to probably spend a lot of time talking about the Syndicate, like, the fact that I forgot her name, but the lady who owns the bar, who was originally, like, the convenience store owner, who was secretly a weapon smuggler, like, her and Gren's story arc is grandly expanded for no reason while still not really adding anything to those characters. And the people who wrote the series made a big deal, like, oh man, you guys really missed out on season 2 because we had so, like, Gren was going to be so awesome. Like, essentially, he was going to be everything that was great about Jupiter Jazz and a whole bunch of new stuff that we added to make Gren an even better character in season 2.
I don't believe you.
And all I can think is, once again, the, you know, the always used L.A. Noir, you know, X plus X to doubt button, because, like, I do remember some people, and I don't think this is a bad criticism, that, like, oh, is, like, making Gren, like, an intersex character in the live action series was an interesting, but, like, that in itself might have been interesting, but I don't feel like anything they did with Gren, and like, they assured you that no, in season 2 you'd see how it would all pay off, and no.
Like the thing is again, I think that they, because I don't think that their writing is strong, they think that just having a character on screen more and writing more about them is going to automatically make them a better character. It's like, Gren is already a great character, and we spend 40 minutes maximum. And Gren is not in every scene of those 2 episodes. So, like, we spend less than 40 minutes with this character, and they are incredibly memorable. And it has nothing to do with how much time you spent on screen with them. It's what you do with the time. And, like, in a very similar vein, I can't believe how much time we have to spend with Julia just to make her a worse character. Like, again, it's just like, I feel like it feels so basic that they just think, oh, well, these episodes are an hour long, so that means, like, that they're better. It's like, you have to actually write something good for, like, us to spend time with somebody and then it'd be good. Like, it having more time with anyone doesn't make them a better character.
Plus, I'm very curious. What were they going to do with Gren? Because Gren's original story is a indictment of the military-industrial complex with the whole war on Titan, an indictment of the prison system and how much they experiment on him when he gets court-martialed and thrown in basically space jail. And that's why his body is the way it is in Jupiter Jazz, because they just basically, you're in the prison system. You're basically not a human anymore.
You have no rights.
So we'll just try all these experimental drugs on you because, like, you know, the military is just in league, and the prison system is in league with the pharmos. So they're just like, yeah, just throw whatever drugs on our prisoners. Who cares? And, like, were you going to touch on any of that?
I'm going to go with no, Al. Like, because, again, it's all surface, right? Like, they're not pulling at the core. They're not looking at, like, what's the theming? What is this really talking about? Is the Syndicate just like a mob story? Is that all that it is? Like, is it just a story about, like, drug dealers or whatever? Like, you know, like...
And another interesting thing is, you know, you want to, like, talking about Spike and the Syndicate and just the Syndicate in general, is, like, why Spike leaves the Syndicate in the original is just this, like, general disillusionment and, like, this need to move on, which he never really does. And, you know, the whole theming of Cowboy Bebop being, like, all these characters. Maybe that's the idea, I think, I wonder at the end, is, like, maybe they wanted to put, like, a happy ending on Cowboy Bebop, which, oh, man, that would have been, like, because the...
Oh, you mean, like, Spike doesn't die? Like, their second season is, like, and then Spike and Julia go off together, and it's beautiful, or whatever.
Because, like... The whole point of Cowboy Bebop in many ways is all these characters' inability to move on and like that, them always being trapped in the past, and even when they make strides, they never, and like the only ones who maybe could move on are in the end, they're Julia, not John, are Faye and Jet, and it's like in question if they ever will. But like,
and Ed, I mean...
Yeah. Ed. But Ed is specifically removed from the ending because they are a character that is, like, why they can't be in the finale. The whole idea of, like, Spike moves on, like, leaves the Syndicate because he kills a kid and he breaks his one rule. And that's why he has to leave the Syndicate.
The melodrama. The melodrama of it. Oh, you mean he didn't leave the Syndicate because he had to be a babysitter for Vicious? Because, like, that was his... I would be like, I am out. Like,
but he did that to protect his brother.
His brother.
And it was like, as somebody, I think, pointed out, it was like, oh, clearly somebody saw the hallway fight scene in Old Boy and decided that they had to make it in Cowboy Bebop live action, and then have the Max have to kill a kid at the end. And that's why he leaves the Syndicate. And it's like, you do realize that, like, Spike just getting disillusioned and, like, the Julia thing being the last straw and, like, him coming out is actually the more mature storyline, right?
Well, also, I feel like it's sort of an obsession, too, with making Spike, like, a good guy. Like, oh, he was secretly a good guy the whole time. Like, he didn't want to be there. Like, he you know, and it was like, yo, Spike made some mistakes, okay? Like, everybody in this show is full of mistakes. And, like, I do think everybody in the show, in the live action, is very flawed. But I do feel like, yeah, like, somehow they, like, wanted to divorce him more from the Syndicate. And it was like...
What's interesting, we had this discussion I forget the name of the two twins in the Syndicate in the original series, who have this, like, idealized version of Spike And they're like always trying to convince him that like, oh, Spike, if you came back to the Syndicate and got rid of Vicious, that the Syndicate would be back to like almost this like honorable Yakuza that it used to be. And like, it's never directly said, but Spike is always like, nah, man, I was part of a crime organization.
Like, it's not the thing that you think it is. Like,
and like me coming back, we wouldn't become good Yakuza guys. We'd just become a better Yakuza. But we'd still be Yakuza. But, and like, I don't
Because he was that person, right? Mm-hmm. He saw it as like a family, you know, like, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like, and then, as you said, Ali gets disillusioned and then, like, he leaves.
But it's just another thing that's just a major misunderstanding of the series, and like everything about it is like they missed the whole point that Spike eventually realizes that it was all just this horrible system that he was a part of and had to get out of it, even though he never fully gets out of it. But like, and it's just another major misunderstanding of the whole thing and Spike's whole character.
I mean, Spike's whole character. I mean, throughout. They also, like, just the way that they reinterpret his whole relationship with Julia is so, like, I mean, I think it assassinates her character significantly. I mean, that's 100% character assassination, like, the worst in the show, for sure. But, like, even like, there, because there's the episode where I forget what the episode is where he like, you know, puts on the like VR, like
not brain scratch.
Yeah. Whatever. Like that one where, and then he like goes back and like, he's like trying to rescue Julia. And like throughout the whole series, like they've reinterpreted Julia as like this damsel that like Spike needs to rescue. And like, so their relationship is just so fundamentally different, and like that dynamic is again, I guess, sort of a misunderstanding of, I wouldn't even call that a misunderstanding of their relationship in the original. I just think it's like a total change, and I don't know like to what end it was supposed to be.
I wonder if, and this is pure speculation because I've not seen this in any interview, and they made a big deal on another thing, is like, oh man, season 2 would have been amazingly different and you would have seen some amazing twists and turns. And I wonder if on a certain level, Kate, and this is pure speculation, that maybe said sacrificious was purposeful. I admit this could be wrong. Just hear me out. Once again, as I mentioned, I sometimes go on thought experiments. Here's one of, so I said, Kate, you're fine with it. What if their end game is Julia is the Vicious, and like this is her transformation, and basically they have to have Sad Sack Vicious come out, and like basically the real folk blues would have been like this triumphant, actually scary leader of the Syndicate, Julia versus Spike. And that's what, like, they were like, yes, what do you call it? You didn't realize that the main final antagonist the whole time was going to be Julia, who would come into her Julia full form at the end of the series. And, you know, the final showdown and big, you know, sword versus fight, gunfight would be, what do you call it? Julia versus Spike, and a, you know, super dangerous Julia. And she had to have, you know, go through this thing to, you know, truly become the hybrid Julia, Vicious antagonist at the end. And this was actually our whole plan the whole time. You misinterpreted us, Miss Renner.
I mean, I guess I could have, like,
it's just, wonder if that was...
It could be, but, like, I don't think, if that is, again, if that was, let's just say that, like, that was the plan. Let's just pretend that we know that that was the plan. Mm-hmm. Does that make this season makes sense.
Nope.
No, exactly. So it doesn't even matter. I don't care what your end game was, like, because you did not set it up in a way that makes narrative sense. Because Julia's heel turn at the end of this story doesn't fit because of all the things. Because it, the problem is we spent too much time with her. If you had kept her fucking mysterious, because the Julia in the original, I could totally believe that. What you just said, I would have totally 100% believed that. That, like, oh, actually, Julia was the big bad the whole time. And you didn't even know. I would have been like, I buy it. I 100% buy it. But the problem is in here is that because the series is obsessed with putting in more content than necessary, we spend so much time with Julia. It's like we needed either more context for her turning or make her mysterious and, like, we don't see her almost at all. Like, because then you can do whatever you want, because, like, the problem is like, if you had just, like, if we had just seen it through Spike's point of view, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, his rose-colored, like, version of the past, which is super weak sauce in here, but, like, fine. But, like, if we only saw her via his interpretation of her, yeah, it could be like, no, like, you're remembering things wrong, which would be interesting. But it's like, Julia tells us her motivation like 12 times. And then in the final episode, she's like, oh, actually, the thing that I said, I'm just going to take it back right now. And it's like,
because she starts off as this naive wannabe showgirl and, like, wannabe singer who gets and, like, falls into her abusive relationship with Vicious and, like, is trying to get out the whole time. And then when she finally has a chance, she's like, no, I'm going to be the new syndicate head now. Because that was something that...
Yeah, like, it's like, okay, like, I could totally get, okay, this person who has been powerless, wants power, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, that's a totally believable story arc, but that's not what they did with her. And they, like, consistently said that she wanted to be out. Not that she wanted to, like, kill somebody or, like, be powerful in the organization. Like, she consistently said she wanted to be out of the organization. She tries to get them out, like, multiple times. Like, that's her, and, like, that's what she's doing in the final episode, is, like, getting out. So she has her opportunity to finally get out. Like, there was literally no consequences at that point of getting out, and she decides not to. So it's like, why? Give me more, like, give me more or give me less. But, like, like, if you never told me she wanted to get out, I could believe this. Because it's like, she was in a consequence-free moment to get out. Like, if you, or give consequences. But it's like, here's the moment, you can go. Like, maybe you would be like, oh, well, she was, you know, she thought she wanted to go, but then she didn't want to go. Like,
because, you know, it's not like she seemed, like, enamored with the lifestyle, and that's why, like, the, or, you know, or like you said, it, no one's ever played it or know anything about it. There's this famous game, Heavy Rain, where you can, like, see into the characters' heads and, like, play as one of the characters. One of the characters turns out to be the killer, and, like, the common criticism of the game is, like, all right, we were playing this character and get to see it, their thoughts. There's even a mechanic where you can hit a button and see what the character's thinking. Why were their thoughts never like, oh, I'm going to have to cover this up? Like, you either make the character the killer and don't show me their thoughts, or, what do you call it, or don't make them the killer if I can see their thoughts, because one of these things doesn't work.
Right, right. And the other part of it that doesn't make it work is, again, consistently throughout the show, we're shown and told by, and, like, all of this, that Julia is super in love with Spike, right? She's still in love with him. He, again, if you made her not in love with him, again, I could believe this, but it was like, here's your consequence-free moment to be with this person that you wanted and to leave an organization that you don't like. And instead you like you betray it. Like, but why? Like, they're
like, I just, my favorite.
And maybe it was like, well, in season two, we'll find out why. But it was like, but we already spent so much time with her. So you're, I mean, obviously we didn't spend 24 hours. Thank God. Imagine even more scenes of the syndicate. But, you know, like, we have to believe what you're putting on the page. And, like, even if Julia's lying to herself, like,
you have to show people, some hints.
Yeah. You know, like, it's like, okay, she's lying. Maybe she's lying to other people, but she's not lying to herself. Or, like, she has a, you know, I think there is a moment where she's like, oh, you thought that was Vicious's plan all along, but like, I was the one who pushed him to do that. But it was, again, in the context of trying to get out of the syndicate. Like, that, it was like, it would be different if you were like, no, we need to grab power. Like,
it's like almost like a Lady Macbeth type of,
which maybe that is what they were trying to go for, because like Vicious goes to like kill the elders and shit, you know, and like, I feel like Julia was trying to get him killed.
But it's very clear that she never... It's very clear that, like, she tries to talk out of it several times, and then at the end, she kind of goes along with it because she realizes, oh, then realizes, all right, this is my way out. And like you said, that makes sense if her plan is, all right, well, if you're this dead set on it and it feels like we're on both on a path of destruction, I'm going to sacrifice you so I can escape, because this is my, I now realize this is my only path of survival. And so her like weird heel turn, once again, makes little to no sense.
Yeah. So like, I feel like she could have been all of these things, but I don't think that they set it up in a way that supports that. So even if she is the big bad of season two canon, like, that doesn't make it a good story, because you haven't set up the structure to get there.
Also, there was this one video that was like super like, Cowboy Bebop live action is the worst thing that's ever been on screen.
Okay.
I didn't watch that much of it, but I did just like the thumbnail for the video, which is just what do you call it? Julia looking at Spike in live action during the big heel turn, and her, you know, they put on a phony subcat caption of what do you call it? Her saying, "I was the real Cowboy Bebop the whole time."
That's fair.
Which I was like, and the best part of that is when my roommate saw that screenshot when I shared it with him, he was like, I thought that was an actual line from the show. You had to tell me that that was just a gag. Because until you came home and told me that that was a gag line, and then you were like, I love that gag line. He was like, from everything that everybody said about it, I just assumed that was a real line of dialogue in the... Well, like, it made sense. All right, that was a line from the show. Okay, cool.
That's totally fair. I don't...
Since this is not a visual medium...
Sorry, everybody. Yeah, I just needed to, like, see, take a break of my weariness.
You could just not see Kate's face in her hands with just this look of like exhaustion and like, all right, let us just go with the conclusion so we can end this.
Okay, wait, I need to, I have one more ugly, which is the ugliest of all. Ayn is in this show for like 2 minutes, all right? This is the biggest, most problematic part of the show.
Oh, I do know that, like, also, the fact that they just abandon Ayn.
Yeah. Fuck you all.
They totally ditch Ayn. At least they kind of like try to give him a good home when they try to give him to Jet's daughter. But I mean, that's nowhere near that. Just like, F that dog, let's just leave him on the street. I know a big controversy since was the whole casting and characterization of Ed at the like the post-credit reveal. I'm kind of in the camp of did not like it, but like, you know, we can't fully judge how that, I mean, we can guess that that would not be from everything we've seen before, but I feel like people are apparently especially mean to that actress online and like, you know, in common, you know, in typical internet asshole way of like, you know, taunting her and saying nasty stuff to her on Twitter, which is like, she's just an actress playing a part, man.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not laying this at the feet of like any of the cast, even if I think they were miscast, like, you know. Like,
but I mean, like, Ed could have been better
this season. I mean, I feel like it's the least of the... It's like, it's just like the end of a really bad, like, it's like, I mean, I don't even have the energy to even like worry about this right now. Like,
but like nothing in season one makes me think that like they would have like done Ed better. No. Once again, not that poor actress's fault, but what do you call it? I just thought it would be worth bringing up because like that was... there was a lot of, like, look at this, and then, you know, then there was a whole backlash to people, you know, hey, guys, nobody's favorite version of Ed ever, but, like, please leave this poor lady alone.
Oh, my God, let's end this.
So, what... Let us end with, like, what is the most egregious sin? What is the major problem? And, like, what fails about Cowboy Bebop live action? Like, to get back to...
Was, like, really, like, just put a pin in it, Al. Like,
look, right? As a human being who can be amazingly indirect and rambling, I do sometimes have the ability to cut to the heart of things when I want to.
Go ahead. Finish it.
Let us get back to our original thesis statement that we mentioned at the beginning, which I feel is the best place to end, of like, what was the major thing that this series did wrong, which made it indefensibly, and why we didn't like this beyond... It wasn't a shot-for-shot remake of, you know, The Ballad of Fallen Angels at the halfway mark. Or, like, this didn't have all the things that I really liked about Jupiter Jazz. Or why I, you know, thought that, like, Cowboy Funk was a funny episode in the original, but totally failed. Also, I'm sorry, one other thing that should have gone in the bad section of... Why on, just sorry to cut in, why on God's fucking green earth, if you are remaking the series, do you rehash the worst episode of all time, the Eco Warriors episode, when you have the ability to just leave that goddamn episode out?
Oh, yeah. I mean... Worst episode for sure. Then we turn it into an hour-long episode. Then we steal from Ballad of the Fallen Angels. Like, we steal from it and put it in this one. Like, why?
Yeah, like, you literally had the ability to forget about the worst episode of Cowboy Bebop, and instead you make it a... extended episode. Another random thing before we get into the end. Apparently, the internet has shifted and now thinks that Boogie Woogie Feng Shui is the worst episode of Cowboy Bebop of all time. which I'm like, I never thought it was an interesting episode, and I'm definitely not my favorite, but like, it was just that like, meh, episode of Cowboy Bebop. But also, considering how they characterized Jet, do not think that they would not have brought back Boogie Woogie Feng Shui in season two. People who might try to defend this show because that is Jet acting like a dad to the little girl who's on run from... One, it has the syndicate, which they love. So they would have definitely brought that, a little girl running away from the syndicate that killed their dad. And it would have been an episode for Jet to be a dad and realize what a dad is. A better father to his own daughters. And don't think that they would have brought back Boogie Woogie Feng Shui in season two. Their new characterization of Jet would have made it impossible to avoid. But let us get into the finale.
I mean, I think just at the core, the question that everybody has to ask is like, what is Cowboy Bebop actually about? And like, that's where the show, I think, is to be succinct, is just like, it fails to understand any of the characters' motivations, any of the themes of the show, what noir is, what Cowboy Bebop is actually about, which is like about the past and the present. It's about found family. Like, it is not about the syndicate. Like, just like, I just feel like I think it both is so far from its source material and also tries to be almost like slavish to it. Like, it's a weird, like, it's like an, I don't even know how, I didn't even know that was possible. I feel like it should have gone further away and kept its themes, because it was like seemingly, you know, like you said, Al, like, it's like they wanted to fit in everything that happened in the, like, all the episode concepts or like villains or bound, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, why? Like, what for? Why are you being so, it's like, so you're being like really deferential to like all the things that don't matter and like ignoring all the things in the show that did.
Because like, yeah, if like Red Eye didn't exist, who cares? It's like a cool visual effect and like a cool story and the thing, but it was never key. Like, yeah, it's just...
like, I feel like if they had gone further, like, none of the stories are the same story, right? But, like, the characters are... because the characters are core. Like, in my opinion, they're the core to every story. That's not necessarily true, I guess, technically. But, like, if you just kept all the characters... if your characters were good and you just put them in a bunch of different other bounty scenarios, like, and you understood the themes of your show, then it shouldn't matter. Like, it shouldn't matter if there's not a Red Eye episode. It shouldn't matter if there's not an eco-terrorist episode. Like, it wouldn't matter. You could have done way more with it to go further away from it so that you're not drawing that comparison. But, like, it fails to do that.
Thing is, if you want a more optimistic Cowboy Bebop universe, then Brain Scratch makes no sense, because it's about, like, cults and religious zealotry and like people having this void in their life and needing to fill it with something. And, you know, that's why, even though she's planning to, you know, con them, that's why in a way Faye is drawn to it. And like, you know, or the idea that like, you know, even in the first episode that Asimov and can't remember the name of the girl, but that they think that like they can steal these drugs and move on from their pasts and get past what they've done, but you know, it catches up to them, and like any time, like since they're so tied to everything, and it's like the beginning thesis statement that shows the rest of the series, and they missed it again and again and again and again.
I mean, I do wonder, I guess, just wondering aloud here, like, I don't even know. I wonder if an optimistic version would ultimately lose all the core, like, theming of the show? Because, like, I mean, I guess you could say, like, would it just be optimistic at the end that, like, everybody's able to move on? Is that the extent of it? Because, like, I do think the past and the present are, like, super important concepts, and the idea of not being able to do that. So, like, I guess if you kept all of that, but at the end they are able to move on, like, that's the optimistic. Because, like, I feel like you're, some of what's happening, right, is, like, that there are really bad things. You know, like, some of, a lot of, like, the, especially, like, episode-to-episode theming is, like, not exactly optimistic. So, like, how do you keep those things and then, like, come out optimistic? But, like, maybe it's, like, no, we, like, definitively say that, like, in the end, maybe Spike dies, but, like, everybody else is able to, like, move forward or something. But, like, what does that look like, you know? But I'm just thinking about that.
Well, that's why I wanted to say that that's why I think you're right. You've then got to have whole new bounty episodes and new, because those new bounty episodes can incorporate that theming. But if you just use the old bounty episodes, but just change
and all the little story ticks, you know, like,
yeah, they don't change enough, because, like, they have the whole story with Ayn, but then, like, that guy makes the whole speech about him stealing the pets to, like, get back at the rich people who, you know, abandon Earth, which is kind of like...
But yeah, and then the cops just shoot him. You remember? Like, yeah. They're like, oh, well, that makes it easier. Like, it's too much paperwork to, like, arrest him or whatever. So it's like, okay, so we've got, like, the corruption is there. You know, like, all of that stuff.
But at the times, like, they make it seem like most of the cops are good except for that one time. And then, like, the only person who was really bad on the force was Jet's old partner. And so, like, it's mixed messaging.
What? Mixed messaging in this show? As much as they say, we can all say a lot of things, right? But, like, about our whatever we've done. But, like... What's actually on the page here is not what they're saying. That's not what they're saying. Like, it doesn't match what they're saying. And, like, if they thought that it did, then, like, that's also, like, a huge, like, that's a huge disconnect between their ability to, like, write a story and, like, present it. Because also, if Julia's the big bad at the end, I'm not sure that that's optimistic either.
Okay, maybe in this weird happy ending, Cowboy Bebop, which would have been the big twist, he, like, chooses his love to, like, get, you know, what do you call it, Julia to, like, destroy the syndicate and then run away with him.
Oh!
And, like, yo, they're going to destroy the syndicate and, what do you call it, and, like, we forgive each other for the things that we did, and I'm, what do you call it, I was just... When you call it, I only do these things because, like, I was abused by Vicious, and your love has redeemed me, and let's run off and, like.
Oh, man.
And then when you call it, and then Faye finds love, and when you call it, moves on, and Jet gets back with his, you know, maybe he doesn't get back with his wife, but he finds an amicable, you know, joint custody.
Okay. I don't mean to say sound that like that is bad in theory, like, but I'm just not sure that, like, I guess I'm most concerned.
Or they could still have it that Spike dies, Satan destroying the syndicate and getting Julia out, so he still dies, but Julia is able to live the life that she was supposed to because of, you know. What do you call it? Fearless's sacrifice and all the other characters, like you said, and everybody else gets a happy ending. You know, Faye finds love and, you know, is able to move on from her past. And Jet, you know, is able to, like, you know, connect with his family again. Even though they can't all be together, they still, you know, are able to raise their, you know.
Or maybe Ed stays, like, I think. Maybe that would also be...
And, like, what do you call it? Jet adopts Ed, and what do you call it? Is his second chance to be a good dad.
I don't mean to, like, cringe at that and, like, because I'm not against happiness. Like, but, you know, it's
Kate enjoys many a series with a happy ending.
Totally, totally.
She's not like one of these, all stories must end in death because if they go on long enough.
But, I mean, something that I've like, talked about, like, extensively, though, is, like, some stories should have certain endings or, like, you know, the way that you build things is like then in turn determines the ending. And like, yes, if this was like real life, right? I want everybody to like have a good life. Like I'm talking about writing in a fictional story that you have plotted, right? And like some things fit in it and some things don't. And I feel like the way that the original Cowboy Bebop is structured, the character, especially the character of Spike, like everything that he does, right, is like filters into like the theme and his core. So it's like Spike dies at the end because like that is what the story makes the most sense for his story. It's not like I'm just like against joy in the world. I mean, you know, I love a bittersweet ending. Love it. I love it when somebody dies. Like, totally the way to go. But, like, I do question whether or not you could really take all the themes and really understand the characters of the original and then give them this different, like, maybe you could, and I would totally believe it. But, like, I certainly don't believe it from this particular team. I wouldn't buy that, you know, like I didn't buy it in what they have already done. Cowboy Bebop, live action, don't watch it.
I mean, yeah, I hope in general we've made a good case beyond these guys are stinky poo-poo and they made a stinky poo-poo series that, what do you call it, doesn't get Cowboy Bebop. It's more like, there's sometimes when you see a series and you're like, did you ever actually watch the series, you know, that this is based on? I think, like, you know, the classic example is, you know, the original Super Mario Brothers movie with, did you guys actually ever play a Super Mario game? Do you, like, know what Super Mario is about? Because this movie makes me think you don't know what Super Mario is about. You were just given, like, you read, like, a brief synopsis and were like, all right, let's just make a random story. So I don't feel it's like that. I feel like it's very clear to me that the team that made this series watched Cowboy Bebop and actually enjoyed it. And, like, were fans, even, I would say. So it's not like this was something forced upon them or that, you know, they never, you know, they just read a quick Wikipedia summary of Cowboy Bebop and then made the series. Like you said, there's too many points of slavish devotion for that to be anything but the case. The problem is, for whatever reason, this version cannot be its own thing while being a proper homage. And whether if it's a misunderstanding of the original or the inability to make the changes that they wanted to make and keep what made the original good at the same time is a little beyond, and I wonder if it's beyond the ability of anybody to know which of the ones it was. But,
well, I also would say I'm not familiar with the team, so I don't want this to come off as harsh as it's probably going to sound, but like, lots of us have ideas, but that doesn't mean we can execute them. So like, I feel like I understand what Cowboy Bebop is about. Could I write a Netflix live action series that is better than this? Like, no, like that. I like don't have the ability to like do that. And I just don't know if, like...
But no one's throwing billions of dollars at you to make it.
Right. Nobody's also like, hey, Kate, we think that you can do that, you know, because, like, that's not my skill set. I just kind of wonder if it's like, oh, I don't know if they were actually capable of, like, pulling off what they wanted to pull off, essentially. And, like, I'm not saying that to be nasty, I guess is what I'm saying. Is like, I couldn't do it either. Like, I don't, you know how to write a screenplay or whatever, you know what I mean? But I just... feel like these, no matter how much of a fan they were of it, I guess is what I'm saying, is like, no matter how much they liked it, right? Like, that doesn't mean that you can necessarily do this, like, successfully.
I think there would have been a boring, well, a lot of original fans, but like, more successful route where they just, you know, the classic, oh, the manga and the anime are pretty much the same thing, panel for panel, and you just, you know, I think that would have been the safer but boring route, but like you said, maybe with their skill set, that would have been the better thing to do. And
I mean, I think the bigger danger there, or I think everything is in, but like an anime, right, can be shot panel for panel because, like, even though they are...
Different mediums,
they are related. Mm-hmm. And like, you don't have to worry about, I mean, you have to worry about voice acting, but like the physical acting, right? Like all of that is captured by an animator and not by like a person acting, only the voice. Whereas like here you would actually be, you'd have to cast people who then can believably play the characters, you know what I mean? Like, it's still, I still think there's another, I'm not saying that that also would, that wouldn't work better, as you said, might have been the safer route, but I do think there's still more, there are still stumbling blocks there that could make it just be like, that really worked, you know. I think we've seen where you're like, oh, that scene really worked in anime, but...
Well, I mean...
You know, like, does that work here? I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think that was also the main criticism and what people said about, like, Ed. That, like, Ed works amazingly well in Cowboy Bebop because, you know, she's an animated character. And, like, the every... You know, the even though we only see her for a few minutes, like, people were like, maybe it's best that season two would ever made because it just, like... You see live action Ed and you're like, oh no, I now see like why Ed totally, that would not work in live action. And this is just, you know, the proof positive.
So I do think that, I agree with you that that would have been safer, but I think there are pitfalls, certainly. And, you know, but yeah, what, who can say what could have been, or like what they're capable of, you know, like hopefully this isn't the last thing they make and like they can go on to have like successful careers. I'm sure that they're, you know, charming and just, folks.
And laugh about, remember that time I did the live, or like, you know, they come on a show and like, ah, we're talking about, you know, your super successful news show. And then, you know, whoever the talk show host is like, springs out and like, hey, remember this show? Oh, Cowboy Bebop live action. I remember working on that. Oh. Like, you know, they have a little bit of cringe joke and they move on with the interview of their new successful thing.
Yeah, like, I really, again, I hope for good things for people in real life. In fiction, I often hope for people to die. It's just me. But like, yeah, so I'm not like, oh, I hope that they never, you know, find true happiness after making this anime adaptation. Like, it's fine.
Curse upon you and your, and what do you call it, and your family for seven generations.
I'm sure some people had that reaction. And like, not gonna lie, I did want to do this podcast a little bit later so that I wasn't like filled with rage. Like,
you, like, people who are listening to this now, you cannot understand just the vitriol that Kate had for how they did Julia in this series. Like, the conversation that Kate and I had a day or two after she had finished Cowboy Bebop live action, and like, just because I had finished it beforehand and I realized that like Kate would not react well to what they did with Julia, but I could not predict the level of like, curse you.
Like, it was, I admit that it was like a very intense reaction, which I am known for. So like, it's unsurprising, but like, I also feel like
I need it
to be a more measured. We don't need, I'm sure that someone somewhere would get a real kick out of like the Kate reaction video to something that like in real time, but like, I don't want you all to see that.
Like, yeah, I just, like, I knew Kate would not like it, but I was a little like, whoa, I did not expect that level of hate. Even I, what they call it, love on a certain amount of schadenfreude to see that kind of thing, was like, I did not expect it to be that bad. Whoa.
There was definitely some like long rants and raves about things. But like, gotta get it out of my system. Then I can process, and then I can come to you with this episode where I still probably said a lot of hyperbolic things.
But yeah, no, it would not be the fresh hot take version of Kate that might have come if we recorded this episode 2 days after Kate had finished live action Cowboy Bebop.
In conclusion,
if they ever do make,
no one, don't you dare say we'll watch it.
No. I was about to say, my conclusion is, even if they ever did make a Cowboy Bebop season 2 live action, we will not watch it.
Okay, I thought you were going to be like, in conclusion, if they do make this. I was like, no, Al.
No, in conclusion, even if they did make it, like, I think we've said everything that we could say, and like, there's no reason. Unless you're like,
yeah, I I'm not a person to really like hate watch something. Mm-hmm. And like, I was curious. So I did watch a few episodes, but I really only finished watching this for you guys to record this podcast. Because if it had just been me and I didn't have a podcast, I definitely wouldn't have watched it or watched the rest of it. So that's about all the suffering I'm willing to do. And I would be betraying my own principles of watching another season of this when I disliked it this much. That's like, goes against everything that I stand for.
I just wanted to make that.
In terms of entertainment.
I mean, especially considering the Netflix model looks increasingly, as time goes on, that there won't be a second season, despite, you know, the people who have like tried to get the show, you know, finished with the second season. But if for some bizarre reason, with, you know, the changes in Netflix, they decide to bring back a season 2, they will not be a episode 30 of, you know, the Cowboy Bebop Rewatch podcast, the way we, you know, discuss part 2. I think what Reverse Thieves has to say about this has been said, and let us end it there.
Thanks everybody for joining us again for some Cowboy Bebop talk, and who knows, maybe another watch/rewatch podcast of something will be in the future.